Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Unlimited Realities. I'm your host, Lisa Zimmer, and I'm pleased to bring our guest today to you with all his wisdom and insight, author and spiritual life coach, Mike Brown. And we're going to talk a little bit about Mike's book, which is You Are a Gift, inspired by his mother, which I always find that when anything is inspired by a heartfelt soul connection like that, the person writing it's just got to be a good person. That's just, it just goes with the territory. So without further ado, let me introduce my guest today, author and spiritual life coach, Mike Brown. Mike, welcome to Unlimited Realities. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, you're welcome, Lisa. Thank you for having me. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here with you.
Well, it's great. I really enjoy your message and your insight and your wisdom, and it's so great to share that with my listeners. I always like to bring them a different and new insight and perspective, and you are full of that. So without, like, getting into all the specifics of your work, which I want to get into in the latter half of our interview today, I want to start off with the heartfelt connection that I really resonated with me when I was reading your information that you sent me. And your book is You Are a Gift, which is such a beautiful, simple, powerful statement. And what really resonated on such a heart level for me was, you know, you reveal that this was really inspired by your mother. This was what your mother used to say to you. And, you know, as a mother of four kids, two sons, I resonate. So let's talk a little bit about how this book came to be for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, just to say, like the full title that, you know, what she used to say is, you know, you are a gift to the world. And the way that it came to be, Lisa, is a few years ago when my mother passed away. And when she passed away, you know, just to set the tone for this, she was probably the closest thing to me in the world. Like, you know, there's nothing bigger that I could have lost in my life, you know, in terms of things or people, or there's no other human. And everybody knows that, you know who that person is for you. You know,
right.
Maybe it's not your mom or it's your dad or it's your sister, your friend. You know who that person is when you think about them. Like, wow, if I lost this person, this would be
right.
And my mom was that person for me. And
okay,
because she just wasn't my mom. She was also like a very good friend of mine, and we had like a spiritual connection as well. In that, you know, we read the same kind of spiritual books, and we talked just about every day, you know, and we shared our lives with each other. And she was a great friend. And, you know, getting into the work that I do, you know, as a life coach and a counselor, I realize how rare that is. Everybody doesn't necessarily have that kind of connection with their mom, you know. And so I was grateful for it for that reason. And so what happened was is when she passed away, you know, it was pretty tough. You know, it was pretty challenging for me, the reality of that, because I know this, I always say this, but it sounds bizarre. Nobody close to me had really died up to that point in time. I think I was about 38 years old. And I wasn't sure I believed that death was real. I mean, I knew people died.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that kind of in my head, but having somebody close to you die, it's a reality that's
right.
Unparalleled.
Raw.
It's like, wow, oh my God.
Yeah.
You know, when
yeah.
you hold somebody's ashes in your hand that you knew that was like living and breathing, then it's like real.
Right.
So I had to, you know, I had to deal with the reality of that, and I write a little bit about that in the book. Part of it has to do with that, just dealing with the loss. And then at some point, I had a dream. And in this dream, it was my mom was in the dream. And it was one of these surreal dreams, you know, after she died, like
right.
very real. Like, real as, like, I'm talking to you right now on the phone.
Right.
And she came to me in the dream, and I was just shocked. I was like, oh, my God, Mom, it's you, it's you. And she said, tell them what I told you. And I said, tell them what did you tell me? I don't know what it was. You know, what was it? And she just said it again. Tell them what I told you. Mom, I don't know what it is. And then I ended up waking up. And when I woke up, I was like going through my mind, what did she tell me? What did she tell me? I couldn't remember what it was. And then what came to me when I woke up was another story that happened when I was around 10 years old. And so, this actually happened. And so when I was about 10, I remember this time, I was reflecting back on this time trying to figure out what did they tell me? You know, what do you want me to tell them, you know? And this story came to mind. I'm sitting at the kitchen table, my mom's sitting there next to me, and she has me painting this painting. And I'm painting and she's painting. And about halfway through, I'm working on painting this tree. Mm-hmm. And I'm into it, and I'm happy, and I'm with my mom. And I look over, and I look at her tree. And then I look back at my tree, and I look at her tree again, and I start thinking, I start feeling upset. And I'm thinking, I don't want to do it anymore. She's like, what's wrong? I said, your tree looks better than my tree. You know, my tree looks like a lollipop, and your tree looks like a real tree. So I start getting up, and I'm like, this mad little 10-year-old boy, if you can imagine, I'm folding my arms. I quit. I'm leaving. I'm done. My mom says, Michael, wait, hold on one second. I said, what? And she said, you know, your tree is unique. It's beautiful. And, you know, this only made me more angry, you know, because my mom said stuff like this all the time. I said, I don't want to hear that. You say that, you know, you say stuff like that all the time. And she said, okay, can I show you something? And I said, what? And she gets some color. And she gets some orange or something, and she starts, I said, watch this. She starts putting it in this tree that I was working on. And she says, look, do you see that? And I looked, and I was like, maybe I do. And she said, you get some color. So I got some color. What color do I get? She said, whatever you want. So I got some yellow or some purple, and I started to put it in the tree. And then for the next 20 minutes, me and my mom worked on this tree together. And I just remember, Lisa, at the end, I remember this vividly, like seeing this tree, and I thought it was the greatest tree in the world. We took this tree, and we put it up on the bulletin board, and like it would be up there, and we talk about it and look at it every day, you know, and
right.
Tree. And so I was remembering this story, you know, going back to what she said, you know, tell them what I told you, and it's something about that story was the essence of what she told me. And one of the things I got from that story, you know, after she passed away, I remember I was sitting one day and I was thinking of this story because I always knew of it, you know, we even talked about it, is that whatever my mom did with me at that table, whatever she did with me, I don't even really know how to explain what it was, but I realized it's what I do for people. Like somehow,
right.
It's what I do. Like I help people to see how beautiful their tree is.
Yeah.
You know, I say I'm a spiritual life coach, but I should just say that because that's more the essence of what it is that I do.
Right.
That story. And when I realized that impacted me so greatly, when I realized that that's what I do, I remember I was just like crying in gratitude and thanking her, saying thank you, thank you, thank you. And so, you know, back to tell them what you tell them what I told you. I was still kind of searching for that. And then I remember going through all these cards that she sent me. I kept all her cards that she sent me over the years, you know. So I was looking through her cards, and in each one of these cards at the end it says, you know, Michael, you are a gift to the world. Keep shining your light. Love, Mom. And then it just hit me that over and over and over again, this is what she used to say to me. You are a gift to the world. She said it out loud, and she also said it in cards, but it was so normal for me to hear it from her. I think I just overlooked it.
Right, you take it for granted.
Yeah, take it for granted, exactly. And then I said, this is what she told me, you know? And I got to tell you, my mom didn't tell me this. I got to try to convey you the way she said this to me. She didn't say it like, you are a gift to the world because you did this and this and this. And she didn't say, you are a gift to the world if you do this, this, and this.
Right.
She just said, you are a gift to the world, period. And I remember when she, you know, there was times she said this, and I went, what does that mean? Or what do you mean? Like, I didn't always believe that, you know. I'd say, what do you mean I'm a gift of the world? She'd just say, you are. You are a gift of the world. And it was a really awesome way that she gave that to me, because she let me fill in the blanks. You know, she just
right.
said, it was more of a, like a statement of fact. Like,
right.
this is what
right.
it is.
And you know, that's the beauty of that unconditional mother love and heart, because,
yes.
you know, it's one of those things where if you're a mother and you love being a mother and you value that over all other career objectives that you have going on in your life, you value the gift of life, and you look at every baby as a miracle, and you look at every essence of God in that soul. And for her to say that to you, where it became such a natural part of your DNA that it took a little bit for those wirings and those neurotransmitters to kind of receive that message. But boy, when it did, it came out in this beautiful, incredible, inspiring work of writing that you created. And, you know, she's living on in her legacy through you in this
yes.
book. And what a beautiful, beautiful tribute.
Yeah,
you know, that's,
I mean, it's awesome. It's awesome.
It's one of those things where I lost my mother right after 9/11 in that element. And she was a very good friend to me as well as a mother. And she was a big mother heart like that. And a lot of the things you said really resonated to me in how you spoke about your mother. I, too, had a dream that was surreal. And she was in it, and she was talking to me. And I was driving a car going over a bridge, and she was in the back seat, you know, letting me know that it was going to get really rough, but it was going to be okay. And we went right over the bridge into the water. And I woke up, and it was, whoa, did life really, life did. I mean, for about 5 or 6 years, it was one unbelievable catastrophic event after another. And I got through it. I got through it.
Wow.
But, man, am I glad I'm on the other side. But I hear you. You know, there's nothing more unconditional of a connection than a mother for her children when she's truly a mother heart. And, you know, that essence is something that's really carried over. Let's talk a little bit about, in regard to the book, in You Are a Gift to the World, what do you find in your responses from readers who have read the book that they've gained the most from the book? What has been their comments or their inspirations or even things they may refer back to in the book that really touched them?
That's a good question. I know, many people have read the book, and I've heard many different things that people get a variety of things from it. I know that I've heard from parents, you know, parents have made comments about that after they read this book that they started saying this to their kids. You know, they started saying this to their kids, you know, like they're like, wow, oh my God, I'm going to start saying this to my kids. And there's such a variety of things that people are saying. It's really hard to pinpoint one thing. I know that's one thing that people get. I think the other people, it's an affirmation of, I think, of what people already know about themselves. Because, you know, one of the things I say is, my intention in the book is to deliver that message the way my mother did to
right.
everybody, to anybody who reads the book. Like I believe this of all people, that, you know, if you're listening to this call, you, Lisa, you are a gift to the world, like you are. And that it doesn't really have anything to do with whether you feel like it or you think it or you believe it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's many times I didn't believe it or I didn't think it or I didn't feel it, and I still have moments like that. You know, sometimes people look at it and say, oh, yeah, you're a gift to the world. That's cute, or, you know. But it's like going beyond what you think or what you feel about it to the space of, like, you are delivering something. Like, there's something that's happening through your life, just the living of your life, that's a gift that's being delivered, that's, and that's what I want to get people present to. And so I think, like, a lot of what I've gotten out of that, or a lot of the comments that I've heard, is that people just, they have a knowing or they have an experiential knowing that, oh, my God, you know, like, my life really is a gift. And,
right.
and that's what I want people to get in touch with, is that it's a precious thing. It ain't here forever, you know.
Right. You know, time keeps rolling on. And if we don't start taking appreciation and valuing those very heartfelt things, it passes us by. And, you know, how many people on their deathbed regret not saying, not feeling, not expressing? And, you know, if we can just really value ourselves and value our essence, we value the other in front of us that much more. And that's
totally.
The circle of love, you know, that's that circle of life. And, you know, you do work that's similar to some work that I do, and in regard to being a spiritual life coach. And you have an essence about you that really comes across to me, and of course this is the first time we've spoken, but you've got a real authentic open heart. You've got a very genuine, almost like a carefree vulnerability or sensitivity that you are very comfortable and confident. You exude that. Do you feel that your mother was very significant in developing that part of who you are? Do you feel like where you learned it from?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I mean that's a big part of who I am is because of her. I mean, it just is. It's part of the way that she raised me, or you know, just said that message to me. My mom provided like a lot of space for me to kind of just discover and be who I am without too much, you know, do this or you should do this or you should go here. She didn't do that. You know, she wasn't
right.
one of those. She just didn't try to make me go in a particular direction. But she just created a space of care and loving to kind of just be and create what I want to be, or just to be who I am. And she just had simple messages, you know, just simple messages that we all hear over and over and over again, just like, you know, just being true to yourself or following your heart. She said things like this that I just heard over and over and over again that I followed, you know, that I listened to. And most of
right.
those messages just led me back to myself. Like, she had a way, I remember, like, going to her and trying to get the answer. You know, if I was having a hard time and I would call her and say, yeah, I'm going through this, what should I do? And she would say something like, you know, follow your heart. And I didn't want to hear that. I wanted the answer from her. Like, tell me what
right.
to do. But it was, it's very empowering. It's a very empowering answer. And I realized, I realized this is the way that I coach people. You know, I don't coach to, like, just give people answers. Like, what's the answer? Here's the answer. Do this, do this, do this, do this. But what I do is that I know that inside of everybody there's a leader, and there's a part of you that knows what to do. Even when people say, I don't know what to do. I know that that's there, and I trust that. And so I speak to that part of people. And then it brings out the answer inside of them where they answer themselves rather than me giving them answers.
Well,
it's far more empowering way to work.
Right, because you're lighting that light. You're bringing to them the memory of what they already know. And you're doing it with such gentle ease that you're triggering that subconscious of their higher self. And that's the best way to initiate shift and change in an individual, is not by, you know, stuffing it down their throat, but allowing it to evolve in their own awareness and consciousness. And that's the beauty of your work, and that's the beauty of how you do work it. You also talk a lot about, in regard to some of the aspects that you talk about in the book, you deal with a lot of people trying to run away and escapism. And, you know, you have a statement here, you can't get away from yourself, but you can get yourself out of the way. And you talk a lot about how people often run away from dealing with their problems. And it can be, you know, money, work, relationships. And they seem to, you know, there's these old patterns that so many of us fall into. And whether it's repressing emotions or whether it's a denial or an escapism, let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah.
What do you feel, what can we do to kind of get out of our own way? Because, you know, most times we're our own worst enemy.
Well, that's a great question. I think one of the biggest ways, in my opinion, to get out of your own way is to deal with, like, to deal with your own emotions that are coming up. I think often what people think that they think that they're running away from something outside of them. You know, they think that they're running away from the problem out there. And the problem out there, whatever it is, whether it's money or it's this person when I walk down the hall, this, you know, people talk like, yeah, this person, I don't like the way that they talk to me, or they did this to me, or they do that, and every time I'm around them, people and things, people are doing what they're doing. You know, there's outside forces that are just doing what they're doing. And what happens when we engage with them is that it brings something up inside of us, some kind of emotion, some kind of response. It elicits something. And so when I say that statement, you can't get away from yourself, but you can get yourself out of the way, what I mean by that is that whatever is triggering you, there's no place you can go to get away from that trigger. You could go to the moon, and you're gonna see something on the moon that's gonna trigger that. You know, you can go to China, you can go to Timbuktu, wherever you go, that button is gonna be pushed. Now, you can put yourself in places maybe where it's gonna be pushed less, but it's still gonna be pushed. Nonetheless.
Right.
And so that's what I'm talking about, running away. Now, part of the way, when I say, you know, you can't get away from yourself and get yourself out of the way, is that I think that dealing with what comes up inside of you is the way to get yourself out of the way. Like dealing with your own, dealing with whatever the reaction is or the emotion that's coming up, like letting yourself experience that or going through that or facing that inner demon, facing that inner fear or sadness or anger or whatever it is there that's like, no, I can't do that. I can't go near them. So I think part of the way that we get ourselves out of the way is just by dealing directly with that, by facing it and going through it. And what I found in coaching people is that when you come out on the other side of that, you realize that whatever that fear is or whatever that thing was that was inside of you, it's like a paper tiger. It wasn't really all that you thought that it was.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's just this big demon or this big monster inside of your mind or inside of your head that's projected out onto the world.
Right. And fears are always bigger than the reality, aren't they?
Totally. Totally. And I remember, it reminds me, and there's this story in the book that I want to share with you that I think really conveys what I'm saying here is, and this is a powerful thing to do, by the way, is to set dream intentions. One time I set an intention, before you go to bed, you can set dream intentions.
Right.
And I set an intention, and the intention was, my intention was to see reality as it really is. So
wow.
I set that intention.
That's a huge
really
one.
It is huge.
That's,
I said,
almost,
I see
scary.
Reality. It is. This is awesome. This is in the book, too. So I set this intention to see reality as is. I go to sleep, and then I'm dreaming. And in this dream, Lisa, I'm sitting on this couch, and in front of me on this couch is like this eight-legged snake-looking thing. You know, it's like an octopus, but it's like a snake, and it has these eight legs, like, you know, if you can imagine, it has a center, and these eight legs going in each different direction. And it's moving around, and it's really, 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 really scary. I mean, I think the thing is going to bite me. I don't even know what it is. I've never seen anything like this in my life. And by the way, I don't know that I'm dreaming. You know, I'm thinking this is real. I'm not thinking by the intention or anything. I'm just like in the fear of this creature in front of my face. And I'm looking at it, and something inside of me says, I don't know what said this, said to reach out and touch it. Okay? And, mm-hmm. and there's another part of me that's like, hell no, don't do that. That's crazy. Do not do that. You don't want to do that. It's too dangerous. So there's these two contending forces within me, one saying, reach out and touch it, the other one saying, no. And so I'm slowly reaching my hand out, okay, and slowly, like just inch by inch, reaching my hand out to go touch this thing. And just as I get to the point of where I'm about to touch it, it turns into a ceiling fan.
No way.
It does. And then Lisa, I'm
laying in my
bed.
That sounds like an acid trip.
Well, it does. This is this wasn't an acid trip. It turns into a ceiling.
I know.
And I'm laying in my bed, wide awake with my eyes wide open. I'm actually awake now. Awake like
that,
I'm awake now.
That is
right?
That's mind altering.
And what's trippy about it is that I feel my arm still extended, but I don't see it. So I look down at my arm, and it's laying on my side.
Wow.
And then I look back up, and then there's the ceiling fan. And then I jump up, and I look around like, what happened? What's going on? And I was just awake. And then I remembered the intention to see reality as it really is.
Okay, so what was the message?
Well, part of the message is, for me, is that, you know, it was kind of like dramatized for me, but like we're always seeing these fears projected out in the world. You know, like I was dreaming and I saw this snake-like thing or whatever, and I don't know if my eyes were open or closed while I was dreaming. I don't really know. But then when I saw reality as it was just a ceiling fan sitting there. And I'm just laying in the bed, you know. That's reality. Like
right.
Reality. It's just a simple thing. It's not, you know. That's what it was. But I think we're walking around as human beings. We walk around with these monsters in our head. You know, like these monsters or these fears of boogeymen and things out to get us.
Right,
and we project them into people. We project them into things. We project them into whatever, and so we have an inner experience of fear and you know, the world ending, or and so in that dream and seeing reality, it was actually empowering for me because it just got me more in touch with, you know, what's real and what I'm making up. And we're making up a lot of stuff. And there's nothing wrong with making stuff up, but if you make stuff up, it might as well be empowering.
Right.
You know what I'm
right. Right. Why fill the ethers with more negs and more fear, right?
That's right. And well, I went to the University of Santa Monica, and I had a teacher, his name was Ron Holnick, and he used to always say, It's foolish not to win in your own fantasies.
Yeah, that's a great statement.
Yeah.
But how many of us do that, you know? And a lot of times those who are very much on the other realm of exalting and they're looked at as egotists because there's so much optimism. And it's almost like it's not something that can be easily comprehended by the average soul. So, you know, you've got these extremities of, you know, self-bashing and self-exalting, and then you've got this middle ground of, okay, laughing at our idiosyncrasies and at the same time accepting our shortcomings, and, oh, God, we're pretty flipping awesome. So
absolutely.
kind of weaving it all in there. Let's talk a little bit about the internal conversations that people have, because you know, that's a big mind poison in a lot of ways. And what can we do there?
Well, I think the biggest thing for me is just, you know, the mind is, I mean, you know, like you saw the movie The Matrix and things like that. The mind is so, I mean, it's a whole world and unto itself. And I think one of the most important things, really, like I think this is important. I mean, I've studied a lot of, I'm not saying I'm like an expert in everything, but, you know, I studied different things and I looked at different things. And there's different paradigms and there's different philosophies and there's different religions and there's different ways of looking at the world. There's just so many. There's thousands of them. And one of the things that I've taken on for myself, and really this is just another paradigm that I'm offering, is that we do create our own reality. Like, we create the experience of our reality based on, you know, our predominant thoughts, our predominant feelings. We create the experience. And I really believe this is true. Now, some people don't believe that, which is going to create a reality. Like, you know, you cannot believe that that's true and live whatever fantasy you want to live, basically. Because that, in a sense, that's what we're all, it's a bizarre thing, but I feel like that's what we're all kind of doing together. You know, there's a reality out here, out in the world, and then there's our own experience in our inner world of what that is. It's the reason why something can happen, you know, something that seems very objective, and you can get 1,000 interpretations of it because everybody's having a different experience of it. You know, a plane flies into a building, and you have millions of interpretations of it. Some people feel excited about it, happy. Some people are devastated. Some people don't care. Some people, whatever it is that they, it's just something that actually happened, and then everybody has their experience of it, and they sit around and they share their personal experience of it. And then people argue about what their experience of it. You shouldn't have that experience of it. You shouldn't be happy about it. Or you should care about it. Why don't you care about it? Or you shouldn't care about it. But that's part of the human experience, you know, that we're really creating that internal reality based on kind of the way that we build, you know, we have some volition over that, over what's happening in our own thought forms, in our own feelings. I'm not, and I want to be careful when I say that, because I don't want to say that, I don't like to use the word control. That's why I use the word volition, which is sort of like control.
Okay.
But it's a funny thing, because, like, you know, emotions, they can tend to just come up. You just feel things. You know, you're there. You know, you walk outside, you see something, you see a snake. Ah, I'm afraid. And so I think sometimes people misconstrue that and they say, oh, all I have to do is just never be afraid again. Like, if I could just never be afraid again and I could never be angry again, it's my goal to never be angry and never be afraid ever again for the rest of my life.
Right.
And it's just not like, to me, that's not like a realistic goal to say I'm never going to be afraid again. Like, you're a human being. It's like saying, I don't want blood to flow through my veins.
Right, or I'm never going to deal with my ego, or I'm never going to have an ego, you know? I know, I hear you on that. It's not real.
But what you can learn how to do is to... I don't know if it's the word, I don't even like the word manage, but you can just learn how to become comfortable, or learn how to deal with whatever comes up with your feelings. So that, because a lot of times I think people, they're just running away from inner feeling. They're running away from an inner feeling of fear. They're running away from a feeling of anger. And they just won't let themselves, they won't give themselves a place, or they won't let their body, because the human body is... It feels emotions for a reason. It's trying to protect itself. It's trying to keep itself alive. It would just do that. If you don't know how to swim and I throw you in a pool, your body is involuntarily going to try to live.
Right.
It does that. And so the same sort of thing is happening when we're put in situations where we have emotional reactions of,
right.
of fear or anger or sadness. The body is just trying to keep itself alive.
Right.
And so I think that, that for me, there's a way that we can honor that. Then those emotions don't tend to take over your life. But when those emotions come up and we say no to the emotions themselves, we say, no, you shouldn't be there. Go away, fear. Go away, anger. I'm not going to let myself feel that.
Right.
Then they actually end up running you.
Or hiding for the big reveal.
Exactly.
What do you feel about someone who, you know, pretty much lives their life on truth and then all of a sudden realizes, boom, the 2x4 hits the head and they realize there's been a lot of repressed emotions? What can that trigger in a person? Because it's one of those parts where you may feel like you've moved through something or you may feel like you've resolved something only for a little test to come across your path. And you realize how not evolved you are.
Right.
How do you work through that acceptance of the repressed emotions? And, you know, because a lot of times we kid ourselves. A lot of times we tell ourselves, I'm over that, or I'm through that, or that's done. And in actuality, we're holding on to some anger that's allowing that emotion not to be revealed.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things for me has been, I think what we tend to do as human beings, you know, you're talking about the ego, you could call this the ego, is that there's a way that we specialize ourselves inside of ourselves. You know, I see this phenomenon over and over and over. I've done it. I mean, because I'm a human being, this is like a
mm-hmm.
human phenomenon, is that we,
mm-hmm.
and believe me, you are special. I'm not saying to say you're not, we're all unique and special, but there's a way that we specialize ourselves that separates us from the whole of humanity, where we say, I'm not like that, you know, like I'm not like this and I'm not like that and I don't do this and I don't do that, and it tends to isolate and pull us back from other people,
right.
who are basically
right.
having the same experiences. You know, they're having the same sort of, when I say experiences, they might be having the same sort of like emotions or responses that are coming up for them. And so I think, you know, to answer your question, I think one of the biggest things for me has been that humbles me is to remind myself, like, I'm a human being. And, you know, part of being a human being is, you know, a human being has emotions, you know, and even if you look at it from a purely biological perspective, you know, if you just look at our brain, and we have a thing called an amygdala in our brain, and maybe you've heard of a thing called an amygdala hijack, and there's a part of our brain that responds to fight, flight, or fight. So when things come up, and our brain's been developed like this for millions and billions, or however long we've been, you know, going for a long time. And it's all revolved around keeping us alive. And so for me, if I just, you know, that's how I get back to center, knowing that, hey, I'm part of this, you know. I do believe that I'm a spirit and you're a spirit and we're a spirit and we come into this physical body, but we're in the physical body. And, you know, it works a certain way. It operates a certain way. And so it's going to do its job to try to do everything it can do to keep us alive for as long as it can. And I think, I actually think that's part of the ego, the brain or whatever, that part of the brain that's trying to keep you alive forever.
Right.
And so for me, just having that awareness of that, I think that helps to bring me back down to, okay, you know, this is my brain and this is my body and it's doing its job, you know. This has been going on a lot longer than me being around for 41 years. It's been going on for millions of years to get to this
right.
point. But now I'm just in this vehicle. You know, this body is like a vehicle. It's like, and if you think of it like a vehicle, I think it helps that way too. It's just like if I get into a car, like a Honda Accord, you know, that car is not going to you know, move tons of dirt across the earth. It just doesn't work that way. But, you know, there are other vehicles that do that.
Well, what would some of the other vehicles look like?
You mean in terms of an automobile? I was using that as an analogy. Like,
well, we
earth
all
movers.
Have tools.
There are earth
you know?
Movers. There are earth movers that move the earth, that will move tons of dirt.
I like a broom. You know, occasionally I carry a broom and, you know, fly high. But, no, I mean, I think that you've got some great insight in regard to where we go in ourselves of what's our comfort zone. And a lot of times in our comfort zone, it hasn't always worked. It hasn't been the right tool or the right mode of transportation to really carry us to the other side of the bridge. And so, you know, we do have to tweak occasionally, and we have to come in and revamp exactly how we're manifesting or how we're processing or how we're co-creating life. And you've got a great point there in regard to the aspect of when we're kind of having this dialogue that's going on, we have to kind of take responsibility for the mindfulness of what we're pumping out there, what we're putting in, what we're pumping out. And do you feel like it's just a matter of being aware and trying to catch yourself when those pessimistic, negative, self-defeating aspects of ourselves kind of kick in? Or is there another way or other ways that we can utilize our best attributes and not really focus on our lower aspects of ourselves? Because I think internal dialogue, you know, I know with my parents' generation, it was almost like, a badge of honor. Because it was like, if you were having internal dialogue and it was negative, then you're a survivor and you're going to get out of the fire. But, I mean, you know, good God, the anxiety that creates. So what can we do here?
Well, that's a great question. I think for me, part of that is, you know, part of this is my experience or what I've come into contact with. I don't know if I believe that, like, the internal dialogue or, you know, that voice, the voice of skepticism, whatever you want to call it, the ego, I don't know if it actually ever just goes away. You know, like, I don't know if that's a – now, maybe it is. Maybe it does for some people. I can't speak for everybody. Maybe there's some people they never have a negative thought ever. You know, that's a possibility. You know what I'm saying?
Right, I guess it's possible.
Maybe the Dalai Lama doesn't. I don't really know. But here's the thing, is that I think what's more important is not so much trying to, because there's a thing, and I want to speak to this, there's a thing I call the resistance of resistance. Resisting resistance, okay? So and the resisting of resistance sustains that thing, whatever it is. And let me speak just purely internally, because I think this is where most of this happens, but obviously it gets projected all out into the world externally. So what I would call a resistant energy is like anger, fear, sadness, even a negative thought. I'm not good enough. Nobody likes me. I can't do that. I would call that resistance. It's just an initial resistance. It's a saying. It's a saying no. No. Now, the resistance of resistance is when that energy comes up. You know, I'm not good enough, or fear. Then we say no to it. No, I shouldn't be afraid. I got to make it go away. So now we're resisting resistance. Or if a negative thought comes up, like, oh, I'm not good enough. No, I shouldn't think that I'm not good enough. That's the resisting some resistance. And this resisting of resistance places a lot of energy on the initial resistance and trying to get rid of it. And all that energy of trying to get rid of it actually sustains it. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
That makes total sense, because you stay in this perpetual state of, you know, blockage and barriers and putting your shield up. So, you know, it becomes like this safety nook, but it's a false safety.
Mm-hmm. So I think one of the biggest things we could do is when that initial resistance comes up, and we all know what it is not to resist it. There's like a neutral position that we can hold with it. So it's mm-hmm. not trying to get rid of it. It's not trying to keep it. It's just saying, there it is.
Right.
It's just observing it. It's just saying, there it is. There's fear.
Okay.
So you're not pushing fear away. You're not pulling fear into you, saying, I want to feel more fear.
Right.
You're not pushing it away, saying, get away fear. You're just saying, there's fear.
Okay. So you're kind of observing the fear as kind of a second party. You're kind of
exactly.
you're looking at yourself in your fear mode, and you're
pretty
observing
much.
That fear. So in that state of observance, can you take that fear in a state of kind of you're as much neutral as you're going to be emotionally and in an observer state. So in that observant state, can you look at that fear and analyze it to the point of where it came from, what triggered it, and start to maybe move through it easier in that observant state?
You can do that. I mean, there's many different directions that you could go with that. You know, and like even when I coach a person, the direction that we go in is kind of determined in the moment. You know, there's
mm-hmm.
many different directions. Sometimes what I'll have people do is And there's a reason for this. Sometimes I'll have people go directly into the fear because so much energy is expended trying to get away from it. People spend so much energy trying to run away from it. So I'll say, turn around, or I'll have them do a meditation, or I'll say, close your eyes, and I'll say, I'm right here with you, and I'll say, go into the fear, go into the center of it, walk into it, and breathe, and go into the center. And let me know when you're at the center. And they'll it'll be like they're walking. And they're walking, and they go to the center. And I can tell you almost every time, Lisa, people go to the center. Are you at the center? I'm at the center. Yes, I'm there.
Mm-hmm.
How are you feeling?
Mm-hmm.
I feel afraid. I'm terrified. Okay. So I just want you to be at the center of the spirit. Just be here. And I'm going to be here with you. I'm right here with you. And just be at the center. You don't have to leave. Notice if you feel like you want to run away, that's fine. But I'm just going to invite you to just be here. Just be here. And if people would just be at the center of their fear alone, it will just dissipate. It will. I never
okay.
have done that. And it doesn't not go, like, if they're there long enough, if they just let themselves be, go walk to the center of it and be at the center of it long enough, they'll realize nothing's happening.
Right.
Nothing's
so they're
really
basically
happening.
Going... I'm sorry, they're basically going to the core of the fear itself, of what is that fear. Is
mm-hmm.
that right? Okay.
Yeah, not so much what it is, but the energy of it. Not,
okay.
Not the what is. So I'll take them out of, because people will have a fear because of something. They'll say, I'm afraid to speak in public, or it doesn't, whatever it is. I'm afraid of women, or I'm afraid to ask a guy out on a date. People always have a fear because of. So what I'll get them present to is just the energy of the fear itself and work with that as an energy, just the energy.
Okay.
So it kind of takes away the story, and they're just in the feeling experience of the energy. And then once
okay.
we're just working with the energy of fear, then I'll walk them to the center. So because it takes their mind out of it, because their mind is like thinking, I'm afraid of this person, I'm afraid of that, I'm afraid. So they're just in the energy. And then go to the center of the energy. And then once they're at the center, just being there. And I'm kind of explaining this, and it's hard to explain this because it really needs to be experienced. Like, you know, if you're listening to it, or maybe you've even done something like this, but if other people are listening to it, there's like thinking about it and talking about it, and then there's actually
right,
doing
and then there's
it,
feeling about it, right?
Exactly. There's the actual experience of it, and when you experience it, then you'll totally get it. So I'm basically trying to explain an experience. Which
yeah, you are. You're doing a great job of it. You really are. And it's one of those points also that, you know, in the core of feeling, there's an evolution of feeling. So, you know, you may go in with one part of a feeling and then discover that your feeling center just explodes because all these other feelings start bubbling up, right?
Yeah, that's possible, yeah. That's definitely possible.
Now, we have about 10 minutes left of our show. This has been a great fast-moving show, Michael.
Yeah.
What would you like to share? What would you like to talk about in our remainder time? I want to make sure everybody knows to find you at www.mikebrown.com. And
Mike,
your book, again, is You Are a Gift to the World, Michael Brown.
Yeah. It's actually mikebrowncoaching.com.
You're kidding me. I apologize, Mike. I apologize. I screwed that up. So let me put that in the chat room. Okay.
I forgive you, Lisa.
Thank you, Mike. I rarely screw up, but when I do, I'm the first to admit I'm screwed up. All right, there we go. Correction made. There we go. All right,
yep.
So we've got about 8 minutes left. Where would you like to guide our listeners today in our 8 minutes left?
Well, you know, just to let everybody know that if you do go to my website at mikebrowncoaching.com, I have a free video e-course that I give away there. And in that video e-course, I basically have 19 lessons, and they're all videos. You get a video every week, and it'll take you step-by-step through manifesting your dream, whatever your dream is. I mean, and that's the reason why I do this is because, you know, this became even more imperative after my mom passed away as well. Like, that's part of my whole purpose in life is, like, I want to help people live their dream. I don't know any other reason why to be here other than just go for whatever it is. It's the going for it. You know, if you're here and you're living, you have something in your heart, you have a heartfelt dream, why not try to turn it into physical reality? Why not? You know, so that's what I'm all about. And that's what that video e-course will do for you. It's completely free. You'll get a video every week. And, you know, there's about 7 or 8 different processes in there that will actually take you through turning, if you have a block, it'll help you turn that block into blessings and then take the energy of those blessings to propel you forward. Because what you'll find is that the very thing that's blocking you can be used, it's energy that can be used to help you, to propel you forward to getting what you want. See, we spend
right.
all this energy trying to fight the block when that very thing itself can be used. So I have processes in there to help you get unstuck, to get unblocked, and basically moving forward, taking inspired action, and, like, really going for your dream. Like, that's what that whole video e-course is about. So that's what I want to offer people. And then the other thing is, did you want to say something?
No, I think that is just such an incredible, generous opportunity for everyone who's listening to really go to mikebrowncoaching.com. That's really generous, Mike. Good job.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're
that.
Welcome. You're welcome. That's awesome.
So I have that there, and then the other thing is you can go to my website at youareagift.com. And there I have a free chapter in my book that you can sign up for. And I also have a free telecourse there. So when you sign up, you'll get a free chapter of the book. And then you'll also get a You Are a Gift to the World telecourse, where I think is like 2 or 3 more recordings where I'll take people through guided meditations to discovering your gift, opening your gift, and receiving your gift, which is you, basically. So these are like
right.
guided process meditations that will take you through that. So you can get that
wonderful.
There. And if
wonderful.
You want to get the book, it's available there, and it's also available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Wonderful. Good. Well, I think your book is one of those inspiring, heartfelt books that is very poignant right now for many people when we have so much fear perpetuating in our society, economy, governments, institutions. You are providing the power, the insight to come back into yourself, to recognize your own skills and gifts and purposes and passions. And, you know, the world needs more of those empowering, supportive, guided, inspiring books. So I encourage everybody to take note and buy a book from Amazon or from Mike at his website, or go to his website and take his very generous life coaching course. And I know I went through some of your YouTube videos this week, and you've got they're really well done, and they've got such great impact and passion and guidance and truth in them. And I like the fact that they're not, it's something that you can watch in a short period of time and get a lot out of it. So it's not something you have to, like, invest in on a course level study and get the benefit at the end of the course. You're actually able to gain some insight, some wisdom, some understanding of yourself through all of these on different levels. And you know, you provide such a service in your work to all of us and to everybody that you touch, that it's such a gift to have you on here today and also to share your message and your wisdom. You've been a wonderful guest. And I want to encourage everyone again, MikeBrownCoaching.com, to go to that website that I screwed up at first. In our wrap-up, would you like to tell our audience, give our audience like a mini guided imagery or a mini insightful kind of meditation or words of inspiration, because you speak in such a great channeling way that, you know, your words are very, you know, therapeutic as you're absorbing them. So I anything that comes to mind, I'm sure, would be well appreciated here.
Yeah, absolutely, and thank you for that. And I think what I want to offer everybody, you know, what I want to say, you know, for the people that are listening, is that you really are a gift to the world. And when you hear that message and whatever it brings up for you, you know, maybe you already, people fall in different categories. Either you already know you're a gift to the world and you're like, and you say, yeah, I know that. Or maybe you don't think you're a gift to the world, and or you, it doesn't mean anything to you. Whatever it is, whether you believe it or you don't believe it, or you feel like it or you don't feel like it, or you doubt it, I'm just saying to you that's what it is. There's a unique gift that you are, that came here to the planet, that manifested as you, through you, to deliver something to the world, to offer to the rest of us. You have something to deliver to us. There's an expression in your being, in the essence of who you are, that's being delivered every day, whether you like it or not, whether you believe it or not. It's happening. You're here. You're doing
right.
It. You're being it. You are, you know, and I know that maybe in your mind you're thinking, no, this person's not a gift. And I thought this myself, or they're a gift, or they're not a gift. And I'll give you an example. You know, there's a guy that I go see. I go get my coffee every morning, and he's a homeless guy, and he's sitting on the corner. His name's Kent, and I see him every day. And I know, I thought in my mind, well, he's not a gift to the world. You know, I thought this to myself. How is he a gift to the world? You know, Ken is actually, he is a gift, because I realize he's working on me, because every day that I come there, like, I'm having all these thoughts about him and thinking, you know, maybe he should be getting a job, or he's not doing anything. What is he doing? He's doing something. Even if you're sitting on a corner, you're impacting people. You're
right.
Giving them something. They're getting something from you. And I realize, even my reflection upon him and all the energy, you know, every day I say good morning to him. I'll go up to him, good morning, Ken. Some days he'll say good morning. Some days he says nothing. One day I went up to him and I said good morning. He started cursing me out. You know, so it's like, he always has some special gift to give me every morning. And then,
God bless mental health.
And I often notice how other people come up to him. You know, and people are coming up to him, and I saw students go up to him, or different people, and they're interacting with him. And they're saying whatever they're saying, though. But my point is this, is that there's still something that he's offering. Now, whether he thinks he's a gift, or whether he believes you, or whether he believes he has something to offer, or whether you believe you have nothing to offer, I'm telling you that just your existence in the world is impacting other human beings, and it's doing something to them. They're learning
Amen.
Something through it.
Amen.
And you know,
thank you so much. Mike, we're about wrapping up. We got 2 seconds. I just want to thank you again for being on here. God bless you. Everyone have a great week. Thank you. MikeBrownCoaching.com. Thank you, everybody, for being with us. God bless. Have a great week.
Take care. Bye.